Project Tribute Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to aiding our nation's first responders. Our vision and mission is to enhance the life-saving capabilities of our first responders through raising awareness and funding for the life-saving work that they do. Our goal with the podcast is to be an educational avenue and a method for our heroes to express themselves. In the podcast, we will discuss various tough subjects. Some of the subjects may be uncomfortable or controversial. Our guests have a right to share their thoughts and ideas, and for our listeners to hear the unedited words of our guests. The Foundation's role is to showcase a diverse array of thoughts and opinions within the first responder community. If you hear something that you do not agree with, please consider reaching out to us at projecttributefoundation@gmail.com and join our podcast. If you're a first responder and you would like to share your story, we truly would love to hear from you and learn from your experiences. Please enjoy this week's show, and as always, like, comment, and share to help us grow. You can find more information at www.projecttribute.com. Thanks, and have a great one.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Project Tribute Podcast again. I am your host, James Walker, and we have another special guest today.
Jacob.
All right. So, Jacob, could you just tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and how you got there?
Yeah. My name's Jacob. Obviously, I'm a volunteer firefighter, a full-time paramedic. I started in the fire service, first responder service, actually, public safety, about 10 years ago, 2013. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit prior to that and got out for a year or so to get my ducks in a row and then come back pretty strong. So whenever I started in 2013, it was actually August of 2013, so I'm coming up on 10 years. I started as a volunteer firefighter, started getting some classes under my belt, you know, because I knew I wanted to do something full time.
Yeah, for sure.
I went and got an EMR, which is emergency medical responder. It's about the lowest of the medical responder class you could be.
Yeah. So, John, just real quick, John had mentioned that back on our last episode. It's nice that we're doing two guys in a similar field back to back. If you haven't seen the John Wayne podcast, make sure you tune into that. That's going to be posting and will be up throughout the next few weeks. But he was telling me about the steps for the different like levels,
right?
For medical, paramedic type stuff. I had no idea that it was like that. So you went and got, because he was saying there was some interplay that could happen as well.
Right, right. So, you know, you start out as an EMR. Mm-hmm. Then you go EMT, then you have your advanced EMT, and then mm-hmm. you have paramedic. So all four different levels, which that means you could do different cares for your patients.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I went through EMR and then EMT, and then I have my paramedic. I've been a paramedic, I'd say, about 2 years. I'm coming up on 2 years now. So that's the advanced life service. We can do a lot more in the ambulance, you know, for the patients and the care.
What was the time? Were you working throughout all of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was young, obviously, back in 2013. I was full-time job. I also had a little daughter. She was probably about 2 years old whenever I started all this, and now she's 11.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, yep. And I also have a youngest daughter now. She's about a year and 8 months. But I'm still training as we go. I mean, You never stop training, so.
No, you never do.
Yeah, you know how it is.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, paramedic now, but throughout all the classes, we had full-time jobs, you know.
Yeah.
Just like John, I've seen some of his podcasts. He's full-time job. He works two or three jobs and still volunteer firefighter. So, yeah, I mean.
Literally. Now, you were saying that you volunteer as well, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah, I'm actually on the same department as John, so we work well together.
How long have you been doing that?
Volunteer since 2011. Two different departments, but 2011.
Does it not get like overwhelming doing all those different things? Or
Absolutely. I mean, it does get overwhelming. It takes up a lot of your time. But you have, as you know, you can have, I mean, if you have that dedication and commitment, you know, to your community, the surrounding community, that it's not an issue.
Yeah. So it feels good to do that kind of stuff because you feel like you're providing a service that needs to be provided.
Absolutely.
And I mean, what better way to spend your time than helping people?
I agree.
So what kind of got you into the mindset of wanting to do something like this?
You know, in high school, I knew I wanted to do some type of public safety, you know, whether it be military, a first responder background, law enforcement, firefighter, yeah, and EMS.
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to do something to help out. You know, it's something I've always been good at and I love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really honestly couldn't see myself doing anything else. For one, I mean, pretty much all I know at this point, I mean, I'm 31 years old, been doing it for quite a while.
Have you ever thought about making a career change, or is this just, this is it pretty much?
You know, at times I have thought about career changes, but what, you know, everybody looks back at the money, you know,
like, oh, yeah.
I love my job.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't get paid enough or, you know, something along those lines, but
yeah,
you got to love what you do. They say, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
And honestly, I look forward to going to work every week on the ambulance.
Yeah. It's a true statement. Yeah, that's where I am at multiple times, every month.
Right. Oh yeah.
That mindset, absolutely, of, especially having a family too.
Yeah.
It makes it hard, you know, cause it's like, man, I really love what I do, but yeah, I just need more money, you right know?
Absolutely. I mean, we gotta survive.
Absolutely.
You know? It's like, you know, I've heard or see on Facebook, YouTube, things like that, different podcasts, that there's so many first responders living paycheck to paycheck.
It's a vet. I mean, unless, here's the thing, you know, I mean, unless you work for a very large agency, you're probably not going to be making a whole lot of money.
Absolutely.
And I mean, even sometimes those larger agencies, they may be paid pretty well, but the workload that they're having to take on because they serve a larger metropolitan area, mm-hmm, like population size, still doesn't compensate them fairly for the work that they're doing.
Right.
So, I mean, it's tough and it's a problem that's all around, you know?
Yeah.
I work part-time security whenever I can,
right,
you know, to try and make extra money. I think you mentioned in our conversations prior that you have some kind of side gig going on or something like that,
right,
to try and make more money.
Yeah. During the spring and summertime, I like to mow some grass, you know, extra money. So kind of keep that money coming in throughout the summer. I mean, and I work a bunch of overtime at the ambulance if I can.
Do you have like a, I like to give you a little plug. Do you have like a Facebook page or anything like that? Are you going to be making one for your little mowing business?
Yeah, it's actually MJC Lawn Care.
MJC Lawn Care?
That's right.
Is that on Facebook?
Yeah. Should be. It's directed to, I mean, right off my personal page.
Okay, I got you. So somebody can look that up in Facebook and go to your page and give you a like and a follow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, awesome. And while you're doing that, make sure that you give Project Tribute Foundation a like and follow as well to everybody out there listening. But yeah, you know, it's tough, man. Because when you have a family too, you know, you have people that depend on you, and you know, you have to get the bills paid. You have to make sure that food's on the table. You have to make sure that you're paying off debt.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it can be tough because, heck, sometimes you can even have your family being like, hey, you know, maybe we need to make some kind of change here. So you have to, you're like, well, I really like what I do. I don't want to go make more money and do a job that I don't like.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you really can't find a job like being a first responder.
No.
I mean, it has everything.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you plan on kind of staying in this branch of first responders that you are in currently, or are you wanting to kind of delve into I know some paramedics, EMTs, guys like that eventually go into like the full on medical field where they go to be a nurse or something of that nature.
You know, I've thought about it, and what makes me think about doing something like that, venturing off into something else, is again the money. I mean, whether I go to nursing school to become an RN or a full time firefighter, like you said, for a bigger city.
Yeah,
we're taking on more workload, but I mean, it's going to be worth it in the long run. Full time fire departments in the state of Oklahoma have a pension.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the same as law enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, now, at the age we're at, we got to start looking for retirement.
You have to. I mean, and with the pension, does it follow the same 20-year rule as the police pension does? Okay. Then, yeah, should be a pretty good pension then.
Yeah.
Do you not have some kind of retirement system where you currently work?
As far as the ambulance service, yeah, we have retirement, you know, and we can add money to that.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's more like just a regular retirement that you get at
pretty much
like kind of a corporate job type thing. Okay. I gotcha. So what kind of, have you ever thought about moving to, like going to a larger ambulance service? Like what do you like about working for an agency the size of the agency that you're at right now?
You know, I like it. As you know, we're a mid-sized town.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say about
not too small, not too big.
35,000, 45,000, something like that.
Yeah.
And so we cover a big area. I mean, we get a variety of calls, you know. I like getting more experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like running certain calls to make me better. I mean, so I can be prepared for another one, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, what would help me, I mean, if I decided to go to a bigger city on, like, the ambulance side or, you know, medical side,
mm-hmm.
Would be that experience. I mean, getting there, you know, whether it be shootings, you know, stabbing, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, we get a variety of it here, but.
Yeah, but not so much the shooting, stabbing, stuff like that. Luckily,
You
know, as far as, you know, for the citizens and stuff. I think John, our previous conversation, had mentioned that. So somewhere like IMSA, you're in a special agency to where you can actually like sleep at your facility, and stuff, right? So you're kind of it's similar to a firefighter schedule, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And how does that work for people that don't really know what that is?
So there's our station. We work 2 24-hour shifts in a week. So you get that 8 hours of overtime every week.
Yeah.
Some guys have it split up.
Just automatically built in, right?
Yeah, automatically built in. Some of our guys have it split up. I do 2 days back-to-back. I do Wednesday and Thursdays, 48 hours straight.
Mm-hmm.
So I can be off, you know, for 5 days unless I'm on another job. Yeah, so, I mean, that's nice.
That's awesome.
That aspect of it is really nice.
You can really do a whole other job.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, get you another 40 hours and, hey, you know.
Shoot, okay.
So that's nice. And obviously we get to sleep at the station while we're on shift.
Yeah.
Now, if we're busy throughout those 24, 48 hour shifts, whatever you're doing, I mean, no sleep, no rest for the wicked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine you probably feel like a dog after a while.
Yeah. I come home on Friday evenings and
like
I'm
a
just
zombie.
Like, yeah.
You're like, oh my God.
My fiance and kids are wanting to play and I'm like, hey, I am trying to sleep.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
That I remember when I was on night shift as a cop, and oh my God, I don't know how. There's some people that are in relationships that are still on nights, and I just don't know how they do it.
Yeah,
I was Mr. Groucho, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man.
You know,
I'm sure.
I mean, it'd be like I'd get off shift and I'd try to go to sleep, and the kids would be running around like. Mm-hmm. Freaking wildebeests,
right?
Stomping on the floor, and the spouse would be saying, "Hey, I want to do this. I want to do that. Can we go out and do something?" I'm like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I need some sleep, and I'm like yelling at people. It was horrible.
Yeah, you get to that point where you can't even keep your eyes open.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I was happy to get off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but I see some, you know, the law enforcement guys down here that are on night shift for their whole career. I'm like, how in the heck do you do that?
So what it is some people, man, some people just really like it. They just love nights.
I mean, just the atmosphere of it. I mean,
the atmosphere, and there's a certain, there's a certain type of calls that come out on night shift that people really like.
Right.
There's not as many good citizens out and about.
Right.
So kind of usually if somebody's out, especially in a smaller town, if somebody's out driving around like 3 a.m., 4 a.m., one could assume,
right,
hey, what are you up to, right? This is not normal behavior for you to be out. Do you work nights? Like, what's going on? You know, you're just out and about driving around at 4 a.m. in a small town. Something's probably up, right?
Right.
So they can do a lot more investigative type stuff on night shift.
Right. Like,
they're not pulling over the grandma that's going to shop at Walmart, you know, because she made a traffic infraction, you know. I'm on day shift. If a grandma made a traffic infraction, we're going to pull over, you know, it's just it's part of it. But my point is that they can target more heavier crime, like drugs, DUIs, things of that nature.
Absolutely. I mean, especially at that time.
Mm-hmm. Some people like that. Yeah. I kind of like being more out into the in the public's eye and stuff like that, on which is why I like days so much. So, and plus it works really well with the family.
So are you on like the, I guess, what do they call it, Baker shift or?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, that we don't really use that term anymore. But yeah, Baker shift pretty much. Was it Alpha? Was it Alpha? No, Adam. It was Adam, Baker, and Charlie.
Yeah.
Is what it was. Yeah. Adam was nights, Baker's days, and Charlie shift is evening shift.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but nights worked terribly. Mm-hmm. Evenings would be okay, but the problem is if your spouse works a regular like job, right? 9-to-5 type thing. When she's home, like, or your husband, whatever, when they come home, you're still at work.
Right.
Because you're working 2 p.m. To 10 p.m.
Then you got to worry about getting the kids out of school and stuff.
Yeah, everything. Pretty much all of the important stuff of the day, if you have a family to support, is happening toward in that time zone that you're at work.
Right.
So cooking dinner, eating dinner, cleaning up, putting the kids to bed, you know, spending time with your significant other, you know, crap like that is all when people are not at work, they're at home.
Right.
So your free time is when everybody's at school and work. So I don't know. I mean, day shift's definitely the easiest when you have a family.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Now, if I was a single guy, I would probably really like either nights or evenings.
Yeah.
You know, because it's more fun.
Oh, yeah.
There's more stuff going on at that time. But
I like the night shift on the ambulance. I mean, you know, like I said, we work 24, 48 hours, whatever it may be. I like coming into the night shift because, you know, hey, we could get something, you know, we got to do our job. You know, it's like, hey, you get that call for CPR in progress or overdose, and you're like, let's get it. You know, let's do our job.
Heck yeah.
We catch a lot of falls around here, elderly falling.
Yeah, I see that pop up on the screen all the time.
Yeah.
are those the lift assist ones?
Yeah, pretty much. You just like lift them up. All right, here, okay, go back to bed.
What is, explain a lift assist call. Because I see it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it happens a lot. So you normally, I mean, if it's somebody that the ambulance can go out there and pick up, fire doesn't first respond some, you know, if it's like a small mid-sized lady
or
gentleman.
Yeah.
We go out there, help them get back up, get them to the bathroom or the bed, wherever they need to be, wherever they should be, you know. 3 o'clock in the morning, we get called out for a lift assist. It's like, why aren't they in bed?
You know?
We're having to wake up, go out there, which it's our job, you know. Yeah. It's no big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But so that they're not injured on the lift assist. It's like, all right, we're going back here, put them where they need to be, and then we leave.
Is it usually at like, I get confused on, like, who call. Is it the person itself who calls? Like, hey, I fell? Like a life alert type situation?
Right. Pretty much.
I mean, fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah. A lot of times, a lot of our patients or a lot of elderlies around here have their life alert and they just hit it. Now, some can. I've heard you guys talk about it before. They're down on the floor for 3 or 4 days. They fell.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, we run in situations like that all the time. And at that point, they're down on the floor. Then that ain't no lift assist no more. We got to take them to the hospital. They're looking at dehydration, fecal matter, you know, urine all over them. That's a whole different situation. So
stuff can, their blood and stuff can kind of pool and right?
Absolutely.
With them being in a similar, like the same position for that long.
There's just no circulation.
Yeah.
You know, and we had one not too long ago, you know, lady been in the floor for, I think it was like 5 or 6 days. So
in the same spot?
Yeah, in the same spot. I mean,
goddamn.
And at that point, family, how is family not checking on them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
She didn't have a phone close by. Somebody came over like that next weekend and was like, found her in the floor, and they called us, you know? So
yeah, I was about to say, how did you even get the call?
Who called? I mean, family finally, I mean, they went over there a week later. They haven't heard from her.
Like, man, it's been a few days.
Yeah, it's been a few days. I haven't heard from grandma, so let's go check on her. Check on her. And at that point, we get there. It's not no lift assist. We know we have to transport this patient. We know, you know, and sometimes they're bigger patients, so we need fire department with us, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's those types of lift assists. It turns into a medical. There's times I've been called out on a lift assist, and it's a full cardiac arrest in progress. Like, we got fire and police doing CPR.
Yeah.
You know?
What, now that you mentioned that, that always reminds me of the one that you guys will get called to. You know, I'll be putt-putting around, and then I'll hear, hey, medicals or fire and EMS are requesting an officer. They got a combative patient.
Oh, that happens quite a bit.
And it's like some, bless his heart, you know, it's some older guy that's confused and throwing his crap,
right?
You know, like his literal poop, you know, and it's like, holy crap, you know. So, how often do you have things like that? I think a lot of people don't realize that sometimes you can get called to stuff and the person does not want to go.
Yeah. So, I mean,
like, they clearly need medical help, but they do not want to go.
That's, we come into situations where, you know, something like that, somebody's confused. We know they're confused. We ask, you know, certain questions like, hey, do you know where you're at? What's your name? Your birthday? Who's the president? You know, things like that.
How many quarters are in a dollar?
Yeah, how many quarters are in a dollar? If they can't answer those simple questions, we know they're altered.
Yeah.
I mean, we know their mind's not right. So then we start taking a look at, like, why are they altered? Do they have a history of dementia?
Yeah.
Are they low on oxygen? I mean, do they have a urinary tract infection?
Yeah.
Are they on drugs? You know? Altered, it doesn't have to be some elderly patient. It could be somebody young, you know, teenager, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So if they say they're elderly, we come into the play, like, where we get you guys involved, law enforcement involved. It's like, hey, this person's altered, but they're not wanting to go. They're wanting to fight us. So if family's around, we check and see if they have power of attorney, medical power of attorney, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we need to take them to the hospital, or can you transport them? That comes into play a lot for us, especially around here.
Yeah, it kind of is like, we need to make something happen. Yeah. This person clearly needs help. Yeah,
we can't just leave them there. I mean,
no, because it wouldn't. They'd end up fighting somebody, beating up a family member, or hurting themselves.
What we call a patient advocate. You know, we can't just let them leave them there and something bad really happen. You know, they die or fight something.
Yeah, no way. You know, we've had quite a few overdoses here in our city, and our county in general. I think that's kind of a thing that's happening all over the country right now. But in your experience, what are some things that, some common drugs that you're seeing that are associated with overdoses and stuff? I kind of have my opinion on it.
Right. Yeah.
You
know, for how small of a town we are, we have a lot of fentanyl here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
as everybody knows, it's everywhere. It's cheap to get.
It does a lot of damage, too.
It does.
You know?
I mean, we see a lot of that, a lot of fentanyl, a lot of meth here. Heroin, I've seen it a few times here.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
you know, surprisingly, I haven't encountered, I think maybe I've encountered black tar heroin or something one time, but not as much as I thought it would. Meth and fentanyl definitely are the biggest things. And when it comes to overdosing, like, to where we're hitting somebody with Narcan, it's usually fentanyl.
Right.
What, could you explain what Narcan is for people that don't know what that is?
Yeah. So Narcan is a opioid antagonist. I mean, so it's hitting the opioid receptors, it's blocking those receptors. everybody's carrying it nowadays as far as law enforcement, fire, EMS. Mm-hmm. I mean, even people walking down the road, they know, hey, I'm going to do some fentanyl later. I might overdose. So they're carrying it.
It's carrying Narcan.
So
where are some places that people can get Narcan in case they have a, maybe have a family member that they think is using drugs or something like that, and they want to be prepared for a potential overdose?
You know, as far as like, I don't know if the health department's handing it out at this time now.
It would make sense if they did.
Right. I mean, at this point, I mean, it's getting to the point where we're dang near running out. You know, I mean, not really, but we're using it all the time.
Is there a place that people can buy it? Or
I'm not for sure. I've seen stuff on Facebook where you can like enter your information and they send you 2 doses of Narcan from the state of Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
So well, I don't know. I just know it's on the ambulances for us. You know, we're ready to use it, but.
And so what it's doing is it's not, I've always wondered this. It's not neutralizing the drug itself, right? It's blocking
the fentanyl. The symptoms of opioid. Okay. So when somebody does fentanyl or an opioid, it is their respiratory depression. I mean, they stop breathing. That's the biggest one. They get it. And at some point, if they're down long enough, they're going to go into cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
So we run into situations where they've been down quite a while, and we have, you know, certain services around that'll just keep on giving Narcan. Well, it's not going to work. I mean, they got to be breathing. So, you know, give them rescue breaths, things like that along those lines. Because, I mean, I've seen patients that were given like 20 milligrams of Narcan and it didn't do no good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they got to be breathing to get that circulation moving to get that Narcan working on the receptors.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we'll give Narcan, they come back to, you know, or they're back to on our arrival. And they start fighting, throwing up, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So we got to make sure the airway is clear. But if they took enough fentanyl and we go out to the hospital, they can overdose again because that Narcan's not going to last, I mean, too long.
The effect can wear off. Yeah.
The fentanyl's still in their system, so they can overdose again by the time we get to the hospital. So, I mean, if they're still in cardiac arrest or whatever on our arrival on the scene, if their Narcan's not working, and if they haven't been down long enough, we'll do a cardiac arrest. We'll take advanced airway, you know, actions and...
Advanced airway actions, what do you mean?
Yeah, so as a
trachem or something? Or
no, I mean, we can, as a paramedic, if their airway's tough, paramedics in the state of Oklahoma can intubate, put in an ET tube in the throat, and breathe for them.
Oh, nice. Okay.
We can start IVs.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Give them drugs to start the ROSC process, we hope.
You can do all that stuff in the ambulance.
Yep.
It's like a freaking surgery room inside that ambulance, huh?
Pretty much. Yeah, they say it's pretty much like a small emergency room on wheels.
Are there like different levels of ambulances or anything that we have, or is it all kind of the same base equipment in
pretty
the
much
of each one? Okay.
In our ambulances, we have, you know, we have BLS trucks, so they can't do too much. They do like transport from the hospital back to the nursing home or whatever.
That's that little van thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, they do that a lot, or we use that on like full transfers to St. John's.
Oh, you know? Okay.
Yeah. But our ambulances, you know, we have a paramedic and an EMT on every truck.
Okay.
So except for, I mean, there's certain days that'll have two EMTs. So those two EMTs are normally not running 911 calls. They're usually taking a patient from the hospital back to the nursing home or from the hospital, you know, back to home or something like that.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Man, you know, people, it's hard to really get a lot of this information, unfortunately. You know, I don't think that there is enough. I mean, I don't even know how you implement it. Maybe doing more classes in high school or something like that on kind of what first responders do and what they go through on the job, what are the things that they see, what are the things that they deal with, what are the skills that they have,
right?
You know, just because I feel like sometimes people have a preconceived notion of like, oh, they don't do a whole lot, or, you know, their job's easy, you know, not everybody,
right?
But some people definitely have that kind of mindset. So, just talking to you now and having talked to John on the last one, just on kind of what your what EMTs and paramedics go through and the skills and training you guys have to have. It's a lot.
I mean, it is. I mean, paramedic school is anywhere from my class was 18 months, and you can take it to 2 years, get an associate's degree with it. I mean, we're going to school for quite a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's continuing education.
Yep.
You know, no matter what, you're always going to be learning. Mm-hmm. And like they say, the day you stop learning or the day you don't want to learn, it's probably the day you need to hang it up.
Yep, literally. Do you guys have, like, continued education that you have to do?
Yep. Every 2 years from the time your license is, you know, by the time you get your license, every 2 years you got to renew or get you those continuing education hours.
How many hours do you have to have?
Man.
I know for us, it's 25 hours plus 2 mental health hours of training every year.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure the many. I think it's like 48 hours for paramedics every 2 years. Now, it might be a little bit more now because the laws and the rules are changing every year, it seems like. So,
what is it, just like classes you go through, or?
Yeah, I mean,
like you can go to a class like in a city much. Or something like that. Or?
We have classes here. Like some of our paramedics are instructors at our service, so they teach a refresher class, is what they call it. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much going back everything you learned and all the new stuff that's coming into play in the medical field.
Okay.
CPR, it changes every year.
I mean, it does.
there's something always new being put in or taken out. CPR is an every 2 year thing. PALS, which is pediatric advanced life support.
Is that the one where John was saying there was like a thing where you bring out a mat?
Pretty much. It's a Breslau tape.
Yes, exactly.
That helps us a lot. I mean, if you have one of those, it comes in handy on our treatments for that patient, for that little kid.
Yeah, I can't imagine having a.
Yeah,
I mean, I take calls for like, for you know, involving children and stuff, and it's tough.
Man, but you know, we don't run them a lot here, but when you do, with. It could be somebody you know. I mean, even if it's not a little kid, I mean, a little baby, those are tough calls. I mean, I ran a few and they suck.
Yeah.
But you got to be prepared because it's going to happen sometime in your career. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Don't plan on it not happening. I did that and I ran a pediatric cardiac arrest. I mean.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah. So, I mean, those happen a lot.
What are, do you get a lot of choking calls, children choking on stuff?
Yeah, we do. Actually had one last week.
Really?
Yeah. Little baby choked on a quarter.
Oh, a quarter.
Yeah. A quarter. I would say it wasn't a little baby. It was 3-4 years old.
What, do you have to do one of those, bag suction things?
No, actually the baby had got it up by the time we got there. Dispatcher, while we were en route, said the baby is crying, which is good. We like to hear crying and screaming. We know airways, you know, air's being moved at that time. So it's not a full on choking or shortness, you know, losing
like a full
their breath.
Blockage.
Yeah, full blockage. Yeah. So that was good. I mean, but if that does happen, we do Heimlich maneuver or back thrust, you know, depending on how big they are.
I see ads all the time for that thing where I know
what you're talking about. You like stick it to the face and you like suction it out.
And it shows it's sucked out. Like,
it says it works good. I've never used one. We always go back to the traditional way.
Yeah.
That we know is going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there. I've never seen that like work in real time. I've seen videos. But we know traditional will work 9 times out of 10. I mean, if not, go to the hospital.
When you say traditional, what are you talking about?
I mean, back thrust. I mean, you don't have to pay for that. I mean, kids are going to choke. So if you don't have that, back thrust, you know, CPR, Heimlich maneuver, you know those are going to work. I mean, it's worked in the past. If it doesn't work at that time, we get them to the hospital. I mean, they can do surgery. I mean, you get them there quick enough.
So you would recommend that parents that are watching this definitely get some kind of knowledge.
Absolutely.
Basic knowledge on.
Absolutely. You know, before I became a first responder, I was like, whatever. You know,
I don't need that.
Yeah. I mean, but the shit does happen, dude. I mean, kids are going to choke. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a year and 7-8 month old little daughter. I mean, she's choked. I mean, and me being in what I do, it doesn't make me, I mean, any more better than anybody else. I mean, I freak out too, especially if it's your own kid, but no CPR, you know, no the Heimlich maneuver, know the back thrust. I mean, a couple years ago, my mom was choking, and she was not being able to breathe, not talking, not, you know, I couldn't hear anything coming from her mouth. So I just grabbed her and I put her in a Heimlich maneuver. And about that time, here comes a big old chunk of hamburger across the room.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy the way it worked. I mean, but easy.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, the old school stuff works.
Yeah,
you
know? It does. I mean, if it didn't, they wouldn't be doing it, or they exactly. wouldn't have taught it.
Exactly. When you were in your paramedic schooling, what was something that was like extremely to you, thought it was extremely challenging, or if that makes sense, like, is there a certain topic or subject that they taught or procedure that they went over that was like, man, I hope that never happens.
Yeah.
Or I have to ever do that.
Man, you know, a lot of it, it's learning advanced life services. So we go over a cardiac and there are a lot about the heart, you know, EKGs it's a hard one. I mean, we deal with lethal rhythms on a daily basis. I mean, whether it be your truck or somebody else's truck, whatever, somebody's going to have that sometime in their shift.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, you know, we're dealing with the heart. We gotta know how to restart the heart, you know, give medication, certain medications we give. We can intubate people, like mm-hmm. I said, and deal with ventilator stuff. So I mean, you know it's gonna happen, you just gotta be prepared.
Now in today's world, don't they, I know, like me, I'm a novice when it comes to medical right. stuff, but can't you just like basically they have EKG machines, I don't know if yeah. that's what they're called, but you like they just do it for you almost yeah. like you just strap them up.
Yeah, you're probably, are you talking about like for CPR or are you talking about like for paddles, you know, like they use
paddle type yeah. stuff. Yeah,
so I've heard from the old guys, you know, the old burnout guys at the station, they're like, back in the day we used to have paddles to shock people back mm-hmm. in rhythm.
Yeah,
so now I mean we deal with that, but they're not paddles. I mean, they're a defibrillator. We have monitors, $45,000 monitors that can tell us the rhythm. I mean, we know the rhythm, we interpret it, you know, and we'll decide if we need to shock the patient, like if they're in a lethal rhythm, like VTAC.
Yeah.
SVT.
VTAC. SVT, what's that?
Yeah, so VTAC is ventricular tachycardia. It's a really fast heart rate. You know, you're going to have...
Okay, so that's really fast.
Yeah, really, really fast.
Okay.
You're going to have, like, low blood pressure normally, I mean, with that.
Okay.
So we don't have... And you can have it with a pulse or without a pulse. I mean, either way, you're going to shock the person.
Okay.
I mean,
and then SVT.
Yep. SVT is supraventricular tachycardia, another high fast heart rate. So we can treat that on the ambulance before we even get to the emergency department.
Really?
We can treat it chemically. It's what they call asymptomatic or symptomatic. If they're asymptomatic, we're going to give them medication at first for those arrhythmias. And then if they're symptomatic, we're going to go with the defibrillating or cardioverting them.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, man. Yeah, I mean, those type of rhythms, I mean, you get in that situation and you're interpreting this, you put on the 12 lead, put on 4 lead, 12 lead, your defib pads.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there. I mean, this person's either going to die right now. Like, hey, we need to get on this.
Yeah.
And it's like, you better know your shit.
Oh yeah.
Because sure. somebody's going to die.
Yeah.
If you don't.
Yeah, dude, it's a life and death situation when it comes to you guys. I mean, in that moment, sometimes it is with us, but right. not all the time. But man, if you guys are getting called, I mean, you got to think too, you guys run code to everything.
Yeah.
Everything you go to, yeah. you know, so usually there's some, there's some kind of sense of urgency in every call that you guys get.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's like somebody fell down or something like that, you know,
right.
I don't know. It could turn into something
like
more
I said,
dangerous.
Well,
or
like
hell,
I
they
said,
could have been
cardiac there. Arrest.
Exactly.
I mean, or broken hip. I mean, we don't want to take our time getting to the elderly female with a broken hip. I mean, she's no. in extreme pain.
Yeah.
And if she broke her hip, there's possibility she could have broke her, you know, her femur and everything like that. Could be mm-hmm. bleeding out inside. We don't know that.
Yeah.
We don't know until we get there. And 9 times out of 10, if it's a closed fracture, we don't know she's bleeding out. So we got to get her to the hospital. Let yep. them CT it. Let them scan that and figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, we take them our nearest hospital, or we'll go to Tulsa, the trauma center. Mm-hmm. We kind of decide on the scene what's going on.
What are some things that you want the let me see, how would that be worded properly? What are some things that you, as a paramedic, would like the public to know that would either help them understand your job better or help you do your job better when interacting with the public?
You know, we get it.
That's a lot, isn't it?
It is. So, I mean, to help us help them. Okay. I mean, if we're looking at that aspect of it, CPR, I mean, people need to take a CPR class through the American Heart Association. Go that route.
Yeah.
Okay. People, a lot of times, you know, no CPR is being done on a cardiac arrest. Well, to save that person, we're going to have early CPR, early chest compressions, and early defibrillation. I mean, that's going to save people's life. I mean, we've seen it a few weeks ago on the NFL game, DeMar Hamlin. What saved that guy's life was early CPR and early defibrillation. That saved that guy's life.
Yep.
So that is a big, big thing I always preach. Now, as far as like us being on scenes and them to help us there, I mean, as it's the same with you guys, same with law enforcement and fire. Kind of stay clear of our scene, you know. I mean,
stay away from the scene.
Yeah, the other day we worked a car wreck. It was actually a cardiac arrest that turned into a vehicle accident down on the highway. So
was that the one with the fire? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, this was in the ditch in the water. Yeah. But this one, I mean, this dude was he coded before the wreck happened is what it looked like to me.
So he just like probably what did his foot get locked onto the gas pedal?
I'm thinking something? So. Yeah. I mean, it was a weird deal. And luckily we were only like a block or two away. Fire was right across the street eating at a restaurant.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah. I mean, so it worked out. I mean, it worked out to save that guy's life. It all happened like at the right time.
Yeah.
Now, in theory, I mean, the guy, he didn't live, but I think it was just because it might have been a little bit too long. I'm not for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, people were there looking at his video. I mean, 20, 30 people were videoing us as this guy is dead inside this car, slumped over, you know,
with the fish eyes.
Yeah.
They're like rubbernecking and stuff.
Dude. Yeah. I mean, they're just looking at us and like, I'm asking questions like, hey, I need to know how long he's been down. He's got his grandson in the back. He's a 4-year-old in the back of the vehicle.
That's horrible.
It was tough. So I called another truck and I was like, hey, I need you guys. We got another patient. You know, when they got on scene, it was like, we got another patient. He's not hurt. You know, but it's traumatic for that little boy to see this. I mean, so that was the hardest part of that call for us. You know, the car was filling up with water at this time. There was another car seat in the car.
Water?
Yeah, he was in a ditch.
And the ditch had water in it?
Yeah, it just got done raining.
Oh, crap.
So
goodness gracious.
There's two car seats in the car. We had to fill, make sure there was no other kid. You know, it was an empty car seat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we did, you know, ALS care for this guy and got him to the hospital and let them take over that. Yeah. You know, it was very quick. It was like 9 minutes total time for us.
Man, dude, that is that's great. Yeah. So stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Man. Well, I say early CPR. Yeah. I mean, this guy just wrecked. There was very minimal damage that I could see because the front end of the car was in the water. Mm-hmm. But early CPR, I mean, bystanders probably could have started CPR. I'm not sure. I mean, I understand there comes a time like where you're like, could I get in trouble for doing this?
Yeah.
I mean,
for sure.
But you also think of, I mean,
there's also if you don't know how to do CPR, for example, if you know nothing about doing CPR, you're not going to know whether it's the right time for CPR or not.
Exactly.
And even if it is the right time, you don't know how to do it. So you're not going to do anything.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, it's hard to argue that you don't know how to do anything in the age of YouTube and stuff.
Right.
I mean, even if you don't want to, I almost want to say those classes are free, but.
Yeah. I mean, certain people, they charge for them because you got to pay for the card.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but around this area, there's a lot. We have a lot of CPR instructors, American Heart Association instructors around this area.
If you do have to pay, they're super inexpensive.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, get a hold of us. Get a hold of you, James. I mean, we can always hook people up.
Yeah.
I mean,
even if you don't want to go to the class, at least go, look up how to do CPR on YouTube or something.
Yeah, pretty much their videos will pop right up.
Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, I always want to ask that question. And I'm trying to get better at asking that question because I know everybody has something different that they would love the public to know, or say, hey, this would really help us do our job better. And people don't know that, right?
Right.
Just going off of what I said, there's not like a class or something like that that kind of
right.
helps regular citizens, not only, you know, to get people interested in being first responders, but also to kind of say, hey, this is what they do. You know, right. these are the things to do and not do around them to help them better do their job.
Yeah.
So it's an important conversation that needs to happen.
I mean, was that the direction you were wanting to take?
Right oh there? Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole, what we want to do, with this podcast is give the public kind of an eye and earshot of what
yeah.
we do, and kind of give them more information about how to help us do our jobs better, and just kind of understanding what we do.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, day-to-day. On the law enforcement side, what do you guys look for?
Like basically the same question,
yeah.
but to law enforcement. So the thing that the public needs to know is, situations are ever evolving,
mm-hmm.
and we train very hard to try and get into a mindset where, okay, we're in a stressful situation. We don't want to get tunnel vision,
right.
Which tunnel vision is basically you're in a super stressful situation. Your heart rate is through the roof. Your adrenaline's dumping. Your vision shrinks, mm-hmm. and you only focus on this one little thing.
Right.
Right. Instead of hyper analyzing and or being aware of your surroundings and thinking critically
right.
and calmly through the situation while being able to make quick decisions.
Right.
We train for that, but it's still hard to implement
yeah.
when you're actually in a stressful situation.
Absolutely.
So when your fight or flight response kicks in, we want to have more than just those two options, right?
Right, yeah.
But realistically, you want to have multiple options that you can go through so you can think clearly about mm-hmm. what you're doing. So, you know, just keep that in mind, that it is when you see a situation on video or on the news or something like that, just understand that that is more than likely a tough situation
yeah.
that those particular officers were in. And, you know, it just try to understand that
yeah.
a little bit, you know. And then as far as what the public can do to help us do our jobs better is courtesy, politeness, and respect go a long way. If you're being asked to do certain things by a police officer, like, you know, put your hands on this. So let's say a traffic stop, right?
Right.
Driver's license and insurance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get them going, hands on the steering wheel, windows rolled down, you park at a safe spot, hazards are on. If it's at night, your overhead lights are on so the cop can clearly see in the vehicle.
Right.
If he's asking you questions like, you know, or saying, hey, I pulled you over because you were speeding. Okay. You know, there's no need to get into an argument right. about it. Even if you don't think that you were speeding, you can get into that argument in court. That's what right. court's for, right? You right. issued a citation. Take it to court. You know, if the officer pulled you over for a reason that wasn't valid or something like that, fight it in court. You know, right. if the officer was wrong. Arguing on the side of the road is not the place to
right.
argue about that.
For one, it's not safe.
No, it's not. You know, you're arguing on the side of the road. There's cars flying by. You know, it's just not a safe situation.
Right.
And it opens you up to have more charges placed on you, or citations mm-hmm. or whatever would have you in the situation, you know, because somebody will argue, well, that's what court's for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you disagree with it, take it. You accept the citation. It's not admitting guilt. It's just saying, hey, okay, I'll take care of this.
Right.
You know, and the way I'm going to take care of this is I'm going to take this to court.
Mm.
So just be polite and cordial when you're interacting with a police officer. And if you
right.
feel like they've done you wrong in some way, follow up with the proper procedure.
Right.
you know, whether that's a complaint that's documented or a, you know, taking somebody to court, suing a department, whatever, what have you.
Right.
You know, there's an avenue for that other than getting into an argument in that moment.
Right.
So,
you know, my biggest thing is like, even on Scenes for Us, you know, you talk about the fight or flight, you talk about, you know, things like that, you know, your adrenaline dump, same things happen to us on certain calls. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like,
tunnel vision is a real thing, man.
We don't want to get a tunnel vision over somebody. Hey, they got a jacked up finger. It's completely broken, but they're bleeding out from their femur. You know, we can't just pay attention to the pinky. I mean, they're not going to die from that.
No.
You know, I'm worried about the blood loss. You know, we can't get that tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Another thing, respect goes a long way for me on calls. I mean, you're respectful to me, I'm respectful to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it may be the worst day of your life, but I'm here to help. I'm here to make things worse, you know?
You know, and man, that, especially when it comes to you, you guys in fire are unique because truly, if you're on scene, you're there to help people.
Right.
Sometimes we come on scene and it's to make somebody's day worse, unfortunately.
Right.
But that's just part of it.
You know, well, I mean, we use you guys. Our very first priority is scene safety.
Yeah.
I mean, we get there. If somebody's like coming out with a gun chasing us, you're just like, hey, we need backup. We need PD here now.
Yeah.
We try to get out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, so I ran this situation where we've had to fight patients until PD gets there. I mean, it's not because we want to, hey, we want to fight you today.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, I don't like that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so that's where you guys come into play. So respect me, I'll respect you. Now, if you have an altered mental status, I'm going to take into consideration.
Yeah, you got to put certain gloves on for that, you know?
Yeah, low blood sugar and you're fighting me. All right, man, let's get you some sugar, you know? We'll make the situation better and we won't have to, you know, go the fighting route. But in that time frame, they don't understand that. Same after a seizure, you get somebody that's post-ictal or confused after the seizure. There's a lot of times we have patients that'll fight us, I mean, to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
But we have what they call chemical restraints. We can take care of that.
Yeah.
So
the you know, now that you mentioned the sugar thing, I remember we had a situation to where this happened twice so far in my career. We had a guy that we thought was a DUI, definitely DUI, right? Yeah. Driving in the wrong lane of traffic, weaving through cars, stuff like that. But he's driving like 35 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Right. Not 60, 70, not super fast, but it's just all over the place. We get him stopped, finally go up there, and it's some older guy, and he's like, you know, he's out of it, man. He's like lethargic, you know, but we don't smell any alcohol. But from his breath, you can kind of smell that sweet kind of smell. And we immediately called EMS. Oh, crap. I think his freaking sugar levels are crashing or something like that.
Either low or high. I mean, no matter what, it can cause you to have an altered mental status.
Yeah. So he got, what do you guys do with that? So basically the EMS came.
Right.
Hooked him up, pumped him full of something, and he was literally fine.
Was that around here in this area?
Yes.
Okay. So certain places have certain protocols. I mean, normally it's going to be the same. I mean, for something, a situation like that. So we'll get on scene. I mean, if you smell that ketone smell, that sweet, fruity smell, usually the sugar is going to be high. A lot of times, I mean, it could be over 500, 600. Normal is like 80 to 110.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really high. So he's probably going in DKA or something at that point.
Yeah.
But if they're low, we get them out. We check their sugar, you know, things like that. If it's low and they're like not really responding, we'll give them sugar through an IV. It's called D50 or D10.
Okay.
Give them sugar that way and bring that sugar up. And then, heck, in 5-10 minutes, they'll be talking to you like nothing. Like, what'd you pull me over for? Why am I here?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
that's exactly what happened.
It happens a lot. If their sugar's high, we don't give them sugar, obviously. We'll treat it with fluids pre-hospital, and we'll take them to the hospital.
Yeah.
A lot of times, some services, some services carry insulin to bring it down, start with that process. But we'll start. Start kind of diluting it, trying to.
Yeah. Okay.
Man, that's a longer process.
You know, and there's obviously a lot that goes into it, but Man, I think that was a great segment, great episode.
Sweet.
Super fun. We're going to go ahead and be cutting it at this point, but I want to thank you all for listening to the Project Tribute podcast. I'm James, and we have our guest here,
Jacob.
All right, signing off. Thank you guys for listening again.
This podcast is hosted by the Project Tribute Foundation. We are a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to aiding our first responders. Thank you for listening. For more information on our efforts, check us out at www.projecttribute.com. If you're a first responder that would like to share your story, contact us at projecttributefoundation@gmail.com. You can find us on various social media and podcast sites by searching the Project Tribute Foundation. 100% of donations are used to save lives while our retail store pays for any of our operational costs. Thank you again, and please be sure to like us, follow us, and share our foundation with your friends. Thank you, and have a great day.